You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome into a new week of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show comes to you courtesy of our great sponsors at SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets for a $20 rebate on your first purchase from SeatGeek. So as we chat on this Sunday morning, the Rockets are coming off a 142-130 win over the Minnesota Timberwolves that pushes them to 42-18 on the season, and they now have a five-game lead over the Utah Jazz for the three seed in the Western Conference. So as we said over and over again, that top three seed is very important because it puts you on the opposite side of the bracket from the Warriors, and it probably means you're playing the Grizzlies or the Thunder rather than the Jazz or the Clippers in the first round. I think we can all agree that there's a big gap there. Now, as far as the game Saturday night against the Timberwolves, the score is a little bit comedic, 142-130. The Rockets in the Lou Williams era have scored 129 and 142 points, so we know they are a dynamic offensive team. How dynamic? We'll get to that in just a little bit. I know some folks are concerned defensively. They gave up just 99 points to the Pelicans on Thursday, which was a strong defensive performance. I'm not certainly going to try and frame 130 points as some big night for the Rockets. However, I do think that it was a little misleading, and so we'll get to that in just a minute based on how the style that Minnesota plays. Now, as far as the Rockets offensively, their 142 points, the thing that really stands out is the distribution. Eight players in double figures. James Harden did lead the way with 24 points and 10 assists, but really, James started off this game cold. I think he opened 1 of 9 in the first half with just 3 points. So really, it took him getting going late to get to those numbers, and he shot just 6 of 15 from the field, but he was 5 of 11 from behind the arc. He was actually the Rockets' best shooter from three-point range, so that helped the Rockets in the second half. The Timberwolves, give them credit, they never died, they never rolled over and took their loss, but every time they got a little bit of traction, it seemed like James was able to dig deep and get a three to get the separation that, well, the Timberwolves just couldn't climb all the way back up that mountain. But really, the Rockets got out to a 17-point lead in the first half without James Harden doing much at all, and so that speaks to the depth of contributions up and down the roster. Ryan Anderson had 18, Clint Capella had 16-9, Lou Williams had 17 points in his 26 minutes off the bench. Eric Gordon has had 14-30, which is, you know, a pretty good game for him. But I should point out that Gordon shot 4 of 10, 40% from behind the arc. That was his best efficiency day from three in a while. So that's certainly a good sign that Eric is feeling a lot better. As a team, the Rockets made 22 of their 58 threes. I know folks fixate on that 22 number, and yes, it's really high. But the amazing thing for this, the Rockets scored 142 points. They didn't even shoot that well. 22 of 58, that's just under 38%. That's okay. It's not bad, but it's not like the Rockets went out there and shot 45 or 50% from behind the arc. They actually had quite a few open shots that could have also gone down and maybe even put up 150, if you want to be completely honest about it. So this was a game that showed you the offense, the capability of the Rockets, because really it was an average shooting night, 46.8%, 37.9, just 76% from the free throw line. So really the Rockets were not even fully at their best offensively, and they still put up 142 points. Now, as far as Minnesota goes, I'm certainly not going to try and paint this 130 points that they scored as an acceptable defensive effort for the Rockets. However, there are some caveats that we need to throw out there. First off, Minnesota as a team, yes, they're 23-36. I know that, but there's a lot of talent. First off, beyond the top seven teams in the Western Conference, the Timberwolves have the best point differential of any. They're just minus 0.8. That's the best of any of the other eight teams in the Western Conference. So it's a team that's a little bit better than their record. You can certainly see it from a talent perspective. They're very young, and they don't know how to close out games. We saw that the game in Minnesota in December when the Rockets overcame, a 12-point deficit with just over a couple of minutes to go. The Timberwolves are young. They're raw. That sometimes shows in crunch time moments. But big picture, it's not a bad team. It's basically a league average team. So the record can be a little bit misleading in regards to the talent. The other thing, the two guys that led the way for Minnesota, guys, Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins were number one overall picks for a reason. Karl-Anthony Towns, 37 points, 22 rebounds on 16 of 24 shooting. Andrew Wiggins had 30 points and 11 of 22 from the field. Wiggins does not usually play that well, but he's got the talent of a number one pick in him. So rather than blame anyone on the Rockets in particular, I think it's one of those games you have two very young, very raw players in some respects that were both clicking on the same night. But the biggest factor that led the Timberwolves to basically score 130 points, it wasn't the shooting per se. They were okay, 35% from three, but it was the rebounding. Folks, Timberwolves, 58 rebounds, Rockets, 31, minus 27. That is not good, and certainly the Rockets need a better effort on the glass, but as I see it, there are a couple of factors. First and foremost, it's the matchup. Minnesota starts two centers. It's incredibly rare in today's NBA, but Karl-Anthony Towns in the middle, and then Gorgui Dieng at power forward. I know he's listed as a power forward, but guys, he's 6'11", 240 pounds. In today's NBA, he is a center. You don't see that very often. And so basically, whenever they had any miss, they were able to play volleyball on the glass and get every loose ball, it seemed like. And really, both of them played 36 minutes or more, so they were very committed to that lineup. The good news for the Rockets is that they were able to make them pay on the other end. Dieng was a team worst minus 11 in his 36 minutes. And a big part of that, he was not able, or I should say it's just him, it's a collective team defense. They were not able to cover the likes of Ryan Anderson, Sam Decker, Trevor Ariza, the types of long stretch fours the Rockets have. It's when you play a team that's that big, that's part of the reason why I like the Memphis matchup for the Rockets. You can stretch them out, and they're just not able to cover that much ground on the defensive end. And Ryan Anderson, yeah, he had 18 points. He actually could have easily had 25 or more. He shot just 4 of 13 from 3. I actually thought Ryan had a ton of really good looks that he just missed. If he makes a couple more of those, it's a dynamic standout game for him. And that's why I say some of that minus 27 rebounding figure is just the Timberwolves choosing to go a certain style. If you start two centers like they do, there's not much the Rockets can do. They don't have the personnel to match up from a body's perspective. Timberwolves are going to get a lot of rebounds. What the Rockets have to do is counter that with their ability to shoot and stretch the floor and make the Timberwolves pay. Basically say, whatever advantage the Timberwolves gain on the glass, particularly on offensive rebounds, you're going to lose that on defense because you're not going to be able to cover the Rockets in space. So in a way, it's kind of an exaggerated matchup, and the Rockets, I know the final score is kind of funny to read, 142-130, but part of it is just simply the matchup, and the Rockets were able to exploit whatever advantages the Timberwolves got in the glass. The Rockets were able to exploit them in terms of getting open shots in the perimeter for their set of stretch fours. Now, beyond that, I do think this was a game that certainly shows why the Rockets are going after Andrew Bogut, because Clint Capella and Montrezl Harrell, we know their limitations. Montrez, they played him for 7 minutes in the first half, and he was pretty effective in those 7 minutes, but he's just too short to play in a matchup like this. And Clint Capella, he's still a little light in the shorts, and so we could definitely see Karl-Anthony Towns had his way with Clint around the basket. The Rockets did have Nene. Nene was pretty effective, 11 points, 3 rebounds, 5 of 6 shooting in his 19 minutes. But with Nene, he's a stronger body physically, but he is not a rebounder at this stage of his career at 34 years old. So the Rockets could use one more big physical body that can protect the rim, can throw his body around, but can also get those rebounds and play ugly. And that's, to me, screams Andrew Bogut. So this was a game, I don't know if Andrew Bogut or any buyout candidate the Rockets bring in would have an everyday role on this team, but this is the occasional one where you could throw him in. And I could see the same thing happening with Memphis in the playoffs. You're going up against Marc Gasol or any team that tries that dual big lineup. That's why you could use that body. Other factor for the Rockets in the rebounding, usually you have guards rebounding very well. They didn't on Saturday. Pat Beverly just had 4. James Harden just had 5. The Rockets with Ryan Anderson at the 4 and Clint Capella in the middle and then Nene coming off the bench, they are very well of what their rebounding limitations are. And so they typically mitigate that by using a team-oriented approach. Why didn't that happen on Saturday? I think there are some injury and fatigue issues. Pat Beverly, we know he almost didn't play. He's still dealing with a tweaked groin that he first suffered against the Heat almost 2 weeks ago. So I think that affected his explosiveness, whereas sometimes you see him in a matchup like this get 10 or 12 rebounds. He had just 4. He didn't want to tweak that groin. Now let's give Pat credit, by the way. He was a team best, plus 18, despite fighting through the bad groin. So every game is precious. The Rockets are treating it that way. If you want to get a top 3 seed, even push the Spurs to number 2, you need to have that kind of maturity. And Pat being out there, even if he was limited, he certainly was a plus for the Rockets. But from a standpoint of rebounding, I don't think he had the explosiveness that he normally did. James Harden, The overall stat line was fine, finished with 24-10, but he did start just 1 of 9 from the field. He actually didn't get his first free throws until late in the third quarter. Now, he ended up with 10, but I think that speaks to the fact that James, everybody gets tired legs at some spots in the year, and certainly he's carried an enormous workload, and I think that kind of plays why he only had 5 rebounds. I don't know that he is at his most fresh right now. I know he's coming off the All-Star break, but I think there's a little bit of a lag, a cumulative effect with some of the mileage that he's put on his body, carrying the team over the first 50 or 60 games of the year. And the good news now is that you have Lou Williams. You're able to get James more rest. Even in the game that the Rockets never put away, James only played 35 minutes on Saturday night. That's what the Rockets want to see, especially going towards the playoffs. I think with Lou Williams, eventually James is going to get his second win. But right now, I think Pat Beverly's dealing with the groin. James is not 100% from a fresh perspective. And I think that's why you didn't see the guards kind of mitigating the rebounding gap like they do in a lot of games. The other thing I should point out, as I said earlier, folks, it's a trade-off. Most teams don't play like the Timberwolves do with those two centers. There's a reason Memphis does not start Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph anymore. It just doesn't work in today's NBA. There are too many matchups, and the Rockets are the extreme example of it that can just pace and space you to death if you try those two centers. And whatever the Timberwolves gained on rebounds, they gave up by their ability to, or their lack of ability to cover in space. And really, as I said, all it took was Ryan Anderson making a couple more wide open shots that he got, had 13 three-point attempts, and the Rockets could have scored 150. That's how open the game was for them on the offensive end of the floor. So it's not something I worry about, well, are other teams going to try to go super big against the Rockets? No, because Rockets made it clear that if you do that, they can exploit it in other ways. I'm just saying from a predictive value standpoint, when you look forward, the ways the Rockets can mitigate it, because certainly some of it's the matchup, but you never want to be minus 27. Part of it's better rebounding from the guards. We've seen them have it for most of the year. They didn't Saturday night, but there are reasons to think that's a blip. The other, yeah, you could use an Andrew Bogut, and hopefully in the next few days we'll hear a little bit more about, well, where the Rockets stand with him. Because right now Bogut is still finalizing his buyout terms with the Philadelphia 76ers, and until that's finalized, I don't know that we're going to hear that much more about what's going on between him and the Rockets, and of course their cap space, up to $3.5 million to offer him for the remainder of this season. Overall, though, it was certainly a good night for the Rockets. They had a double-digit win over a quality opponent, and, well, if you score 142 points in the game, any complaints are nitpicking at that point. It's certainly a very positive night for the Rockets. What does it mean moving forward? We'll get to that in just a minute, but for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our wonderful sponsors at SeatGeek, because they're the folks responsible for bringing you today's show. If you want to buy tickets for upcoming Rockets home games, they've got two big ones this week. Indiana Pacers on Monday night, that's a nationally televised game, and then the Memphis Grizzlies on Saturday, that's a big showdown for playoff positioning in the Western Conference. If you want to get tickets to either of those games at Toyota Center, please use our friends at SeatGeek. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it so easy for fans like us to both buy and sell tickets. For me personally, SeatGeek is the first place I go to look for tickets for any particular game or concert. The best part about them, they grade every ticket from 1 to 100, so you know you're getting the best bang for your buck. They also do comparisons of other ticket sites so that you know every time that you're getting the best possible deal for your budget. The best part for you guys, though, as my listeners here at Locked On Rockets, y'all get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, to get that $20 rebate, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code, then enter the promo code LORockets. From there, SeatGeek will send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. So jumping back into the show, we were spending the last few minutes talking about the Rockets' rebounding limitations, why they gave up 130 points to the Timberwolves. I don't know if we've spoken enough about why they scored 142 on the other end, because certainly while it was a little bit of a disappointing flat performance defensively, it was not on the offensive end. I think you guys have seen the shot charts. I retweeted one last night. Basically, the Rockets took one shot all game. Appropriately, they missed it. But one shot all game that was not either in the paint or behind the three-point arc. So this is the ultimate Morey ball team. And, well, it's working exactly as it should. Actually, had a combined 58 three-point attempts and 42 free throws. 100 combined with those two. And the statisticians I follow said that they never saw that ever happening in the NBA before last night. So the Rockets are taking it to an extreme, but yeah, you can take it to an extreme if you win, and they are certainly doing that now, 42-18 and in firm command of the number 3 seed in the Western Conference. Now, what does that mean moving forward for them? I've got a good guest coming up, David Locke. He is the play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz. He's also the host of Locked On Jazz and Locked On NBA. And he had a trade deadline special last week in which he went over some of the moves judged through the value of PAC. And PAC, it's a proprietary formula he's got. It's called Points Above Average Created. You can Google it, PAAC, and find more details. But in layman's terms, it's points above average created, exactly what it says. It's a way to tell the analytics contribution of each player relative to the average. And the Rockets, after Lou Williams trade, the kicker after sending Corey Brewer out and bringing Lou Williams in, basically every player in their rotation is now an above average option from an offensive standpoint. And what that stat does is measure their contributions relative to the average to give you a better sense of exactly where they stack up relative to a mid-level NBA player. So without any further ado, I'm going to play back David's analysis of, the Lou Williams for Corey Brewer trade and what it means for the Rockets and their new rotation the rest of the year.
The biggest win of the trade deadline, Lou Williams to Houston for Corey Brewer. Lou Williams is the best offensive player traded. His PAC rating is plus 1.7. He's the 16th most positive impact offensive player in the NBA. The Laker offense was 10 points per 100 possessions better when he was on the floor. So Lou Williams, on an average night, scores 1.7 points more than the average player does in his 15 scoring opportunities. It's incredibly high. PAC, points above average created. And so Williams is now the second best PAC player on the Rockets, other than James Harden. So whomever's possessions he takes, they become a better offensive team. Now, I'm not sure if he gets 15 scoring opportunities a night. He was the number one usage player for the Lakers, so that might be down a little bit. But now let's talk about who he's taking him from. Corey Brewer, who they traded, was the worst PAC player on the Rockets. This is not quite the same as the day I remember doing Pau Gasol replacing Kwame Brown, but this has you're taking the worst offensive player off the Rockets and putting on a top 20 offensive player in the NBA and Lou Williams on their roster. Over the years when I've studied PAC, the signature of a championship team is that every player on the roster is above average. And what the impact on the floor to that is that when you take the ball out of Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen's or LeBron James or whomever's hand, Steph Curry, and they have to swing it around and move it to the next guy because you're putting your defense, that the player who then uses that possession at the end is still above average. That's what makes up a championship team. If Andre Iguodala is above average and he uses that possession, you're still fine because you have these superstar in Steph Curry and no one's going to be able to catch Steph Curry over the course of... Well, the Rockets are there. The only player on their team who has a negative PAC rating right now is Trevor Ariza at minus 0.1. So he's basically even. You now take Lou Williams in. Let's say he takes two or three Trevor Ariza possessions. He takes the few Corey Brewer possessions. He takes a few other guys' possessions. He's the second best. And the Rockets are now the number one offensive team in the NBA. The Rockets will, from this point on, be the number one offensive team in the NBA. It's a great trade and changes puts the Rockets, who were already, two, three, or four offensively, I think number two last time I checked, they will be the best offensive team in the NBA the rest of the way. The Rockets are a huge winner at this trade deadline.
Well, folks, that was pretty high praise. That, of course, was David Locke, the Utah Jazz play-by-play voice. Coincidentally, that's the team that's closest to the Rockets in the standings. They're five games back in the four seed as we record this podcast. And if you're not already following him on Twitter, you can do so at Locked On Sports. Again, his name is David Locke. The big takeaway I had, though, number one in the league, even better than the Warriors. That's how good the Rockets should be offensively after adding Lou Williams. Because essentially they were the number two offense in the league, borderline number two. They bounced between two and four. But that was with a player in Corey Brewer that was playing close to 20 minutes a night that was essentially dead weight. Now you replace Corey Brewer, your worst player in the rotation, with a top 20 offensive player from an efficiency standpoint in Lou Williams. There are no weaknesses. And I know it's early, but everything we've seen so far would seem to show that. The Rockets have scored 129 and 142 points in their two games with Lou Williams. And what really stands out is that there are no weaknesses. Saturday night, you had eight players in double figures. Actually, almost had nine. Sam Decker had 8 points off the bench in his 60 minutes. But there's no drop-off. In some ways, the Rockets are actually more advantaged with their bench unit because as good as the starters are, the comparison of the Rockets bench to other benches, the gap is even bigger than it is comparing the Rockets starters to the other team's starters. So sometimes your bench even gives you more separation. It doesn't just hold the line, which is what we were hoping for earlier in the year. When the year started, you essentially were just hoping that that bench unit could buy you 12 minutes a game when James Harden rested and not let it fall apart as they did a year ago. Right now, the Rockets bench actually thrives. That's in these first two games with Lou Williams in the second quarters in both New Orleans and Saturday night at Toyota Center against Minnesota, that's when the Rockets had their biggest runs. Saturday night, they had a 16-0 spurt in the second quarter to go from a 1-point game to a 17-point game, all with James Harden on the bench. So that really speaks to the depth of the rotation now, that in many ways that bench unit, now it's not the bench unit is better than the starters, it's that the bench unit is on a relative basis to the average other team's bench unit is better than starters versus starters. But in many ways, you're not just trying to hold on anymore. The bench unit is where the Rockets can get some separation. But as far as what it means, when you have a rotation that's good, those top eight guys can be double-figure candidates every night, and then you add in Sam Decker and Montrezl Harrell as kind of your ninth and tenth men off the bench, boy, it is tough to see where you stop the Rockets. Now, does that mean they're a contender to the level of the Warriors, I should say? Not quite, because the Warriors, yeah, they're probably the number two offense right now. They also have a top five defense, whereas the Rockets are just hoping to be in the top 10. But what I will say is that if you have indisputably the number one offense and you can get that defense to a top 10 level where the Rockets have been close to for big stretches this year, that is a good enough team to at least give you a fighting chance, even against the Warriors. And that's something the Rockets obviously want to do. We heard from Daryl Morey on Friday that these moves were made by giving them the best chance to compete against Golden State this season. And while the Warriors are still certainly going to be favored, they have the number two offense, a top five defense, one of the more talented rosters in the history of the NBA. Flip side is that if you have the number one offense and a top 10 defense, which is where Jeff Pestelic wants to get the Rockets and has had them for brief stretches, especially when healthy this year, it gives you a fighting chance that, well, you get a couple of bounces, maybe there's an injury a certain way, or the Rockets are just that hot from three. Because the real takeaway, I'll close out this show by echoing what I said leading off, the Rockets scored 142 points. They weren't even at their best offensively. Shot below 38% from three. I actually thought Ryan Anderson, Lou Williams had some really open looks that they just didn't make. So this could be even better. And for what it means for the Rockets as a team, basically, they've gone from having a pretty good offense, well, shouldn't say pretty good, a really good offense before the break, to now what should be a historically elite one. And there are all sorts of things that you can do with that moving forward as the Rockets close out this season and embark on what we hope is a very lengthy playoff run in the months ahead. So on that extremely positive note, let's go ahead and wrap it there. Appreciate all of you guys for tuning in to me here on Locked On Rockets, as always. Also, special thanks to our friends at SeatGeek. They're the sponsors responsible for bringing you today's show. Remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. That will give you a $20 rebate on your first purchase from SeatGeek. As far as where the Rockets go from here, it's Sunday. They are going to practice today. Sometimes you have that off day in between games, and they're in a game every other day rotation now. Sometimes you'll get that as an off day, but I think the Rockets, they have a new piece in Lou Williams. They also have some defensive tape they want to show. So it's not going to be an off day. They are going to have a practice today, this afternoon, at Toyota Center. I think the Rockets want to stay fresh. They want to get in that routine. Then you have the Pacers tomorrow night. That's an 8:30 late tip, but it is nationally televised on TNT. And then you have the Clippers and Grizzlies to close out the week. Schedule is going to get a lot tougher in March. The Pelicans and Timberwolves, not exactly the cream of the crop in terms of your competition. That is going to step up in the coming weeks, so we're going to get to see just how advanced this Rockets offense is. And of course, if you stick with me here at Locked On Rockets, we will have you covered every day. This is the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. We are so happy to have filled that role. And so if there's anything we can do better, please don't hesitate to reach out to us and let us know what you think. You can do that on Twitter, at Ben Dubose for me, at Locked On Rockets for the show. You can also email the show at lockedonrockets@gmail.com if you've got questions for me or if you'd like to inquire about becoming a potential sponsor, just as SeatGeek was today. Also, if you haven't already subscribed to us or rated us, please feel free to do so. iTunes, Google Play, Audio Boom, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your media, just search for Locked On Rockets and you can find any of our 140-some-odd episodes. Once again, very happy final from Toyota Center Saturday night. Rockets 142, Timberwolves 130. The practicing today, that's Sunday, and then back in action tomorrow night against the Indiana Pacers, also at Toyota Center, but a nationally televised game on TNT. Look forward to chatting with you about that one then.